Hi, welcome to the Integrative Health Podcast with Dr. Jen Flegar. This podcast is meant to educate and empower about important health topics. Dr. Jen's passion is to get to the root cause of disease and prevent illness. She will also feature guests who are experts in their fields and experiences in all things related to integrative medicine.
Hello, this is Dr. Jen. Welcome back to the Integrative Health Podcast. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe and give a 5-star review and share with your friends. Thank you so much for tuning in today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Integrative Health Podcast with Dr. Jen. Today, we're talking with Brian Sanders. He's a filmmaker behind the Food Lies documentary, host of the top 5 nutrition podcast, Peak Human, and an international speaker. He graduated from UCLA with a degree in mechanical engineering. He's the founder of Sapien Center, a popular health club in Austin, Texas. And he also works to spread the awareness of regenerative agriculture and increase access to well-raised animal products throughout his nationwide meat and body care company, Nose to Tail. Welcome, Brian. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Dr. Jen. Yeah, we did it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good. You're a busy guy, so I'm glad I could get you on here.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about your story. And my listeners might not know who you are, so I would love for them to be introduced to you and really talk about why you're so passionate about meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. I am. It's my persona, but it changed my life. And it's really important to me to spread this message. I'm on Instagram a lot. It's Food Lies. Just search for me on Food Lies and you'll kind of see what I do. Cause a little ruffle some feathers, but yeah. I'm trying to, just spread the truth. And there's a really anti-meat agenda going on. And I think there's a lot of corporate interests behind that. And there's big pharma, sick care, you know, all these forces that kind of don't want this message out there. A lot of statins, a lot of money to be made on these old paradigms that turn out to not be true. So that's why I'm making the Food Lies documentary series. It's 6 episodes. We actually screened the first episode a couple of days ago with some people in Austin. We're sending it out to big studios and some celebrities. And, you know, it's really, really good. And everyone loves it. And it's going to be on a big platform. So that's a preview to that. But for my personal story, about 10 years ago, I lost both my parents to chronic disease. So I was 30. Now I'm 40, way better shape. Back at 30, didn't know what I was doing. I was just eating the food pyramid. I was actually eating really close to what I was told to. I didn't go out to eat a lot. My family had always cooked our own meals. Like, we did this our whole lives. I grew up in the 80s, right? And it's like low fat paradigm. My parents did the whole thing, whole grain, pasta, whole grain, breads, rice, brown rice, vegetables, lean chicken, low fat milk, like the whole thing. We did it all. And they just got unhealthier and unhealthier. Each year that went on, you kind of gain the pound of fat, the really bad fat too, probably the visceral fat, a lot of visceral fat. I could tell looking back at my parents, they weren't obese at all. They just had the dad bod. And you just kind of have that little belly where there's just visceral fat under there, just causing mayhem metabolically. So now looking back, I kind of realized what was going on. No doctors were telling them any of this. I like this stat that's come straight from the CDC that 8 out of 10 people who have pre-diabetes don't know it, right? So they're just failing. Like, their whole job is to, right? It's like, what else do these national health systems do other than try to help people with their health? And I don't think they're doing any of that. I think they're just selling drugs and having huge hospitals make money and just supporting this standard paradigm. So they didn't know they were getting these health problems. I didn't know I was getting these health problems. I was 30, 25 pounds heavier just of fat and having all these chronic conditions pop up and acid reflux and overuse injury, arthritis type injuries or kind of like overuse joint pain type of stuff. Just all kinds of bad things going on. Way too young. Switched it completely around, started eating way more meat, right? I was eating all the things I was told not to, right? We were told to not eat red meat, to limit red meat, to not eat saturated fat, limit the cholesterol, all this stuff. Did the exact opposite of that, cut out all refined foods, refined oils, refined grains, refined sugars, and everything turned around in a matter of months. And I just wanted to shout it from the rooftops. So 6 years ago, I quit all my jobs, as you know, in mechanical engineering and tech and doing all this stuff, saved up my money and went off on my own and just decided to make the Food Lies series. And here I am.
That's amazing. And I want to go back to your story a little bit. I'm 42. I just turned 42. And same, I grew up, you know, in the 80s where the low fat craze, margarine, right, is better than butter and low fat milk, like you were saying. And now I'm complete opposite too. And I feel better than I did in my 20s. And the crazy thing was, is same with my family. I remember my mom cooking most of our meals, following every recommendation from the CDC, the FDA, all of that. And I ended up with Hashimoto's, with thyroid disease, with an autoimmune disease. So it's almost like going through that and going through medical school where they just, you know, here are the symptoms, here's the disease, here's the drug. That's literally how we were taught. And if you look at how medical schools were kind of made, we can see that it all goes back to big pharma. And the other problem is with doctors is they lose that curiosity, because in medical school, you're kind of shot down if you ask questions, if you question the topics, the professors. You know, we lose that curiosity throughout our residency, and then going and working for big administrators, which are, you know, hospitals are just a part of the government, you know, when it comes down to it. And they're just pushing these, you know, how much money can we make? So it usually comes from personal stories where, you know, we get passionate about this stuff and we want to get to the root cause, because that was me. I wanted out of my autoimmune disease. I didn't want any more disease. Especially when I had kids, that kind of flipped the switch for me. Like, okay, it's not just me, you know, I have to live longer for my kids. And it's really hard. And that's why we need passionate people like you. It's hard to change people's minds about this, because we've been conditioned throughout our life, right? With every single commercial, all the advertisements. So I just love what you're doing. I think documentaries are so important. Do you feel like you're going to get censored, or how are you dealing with that?
Yeah, I'm very curious what's going to happen. My friends Rob Wolf and Diana Rogers made a film called Sacred Cow, and it was spreading some of this message, and they couldn't make a deal with Netflix. I have no idea what went on there. But I'm a bit afraid that they don't want this message. But then I think ours will get on Netflix, because we're having way more broad appeal. We're doing a different type of film, and it's not just like, oh, it's like Sacred Cow. Even in the name, it's a little intense of like, you know, just so pro meat. But we're just against processed foods, and we're supporting meat and other whole foods. It's healthy. So it's not like, oh, this, you have to be carnivore, you have to be low carb, or you have to be keto. You know, we don't go into any of these dietary camps. We really stay high level and really teach people what do human bodies need. And I think Netflix will pick it up because they want clicks. We got to use their tricks against them, right? So even Instagram, they just want views, and they put the algorithm to make people mad and like controversial and this whole thing. So yeah, I think we'll give them something that will be very controversial, because we are going against this complete establishment. All right. It's been decades of this.
And it's so biased. I mean, look at Game Changers, and then You Are What You Eat, who are, you know, funded by the same people. And I had so many people asking me to watch that. I literally could only make it through the first episode. And I was like, this is so biased and painful. And when you look at the actual studies, you know, they leave out information in the documentary about the actual DEXA scan results, how the vegans were actually losing muscle. They lost weight, but they had less calories. So I think it's so hard for the average consumer to watch these documentaries, and they come away, because it's so biased, they come away thinking, oh, meat isn't good. You know, look at all these athletes or whatever. But, you know, speaking of athletes, it's funny, because a lot of the athletes that have come out and say they were vegan, you find out they weren't, or they were for a short time, right? Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah, and they quit, and then they got injured, and I did a whole little mini YouTube documentary debunking Game Changers. So you can find that, Game Changers Debunked, on my Food Lies channel. And then, yeah, the You Are What You Eat thing, it's totally bogus. Yeah, I read the study immediately when I saw it come out, before the thing on Netflix even came out, and I went straight, and you have to download the like appendix and look at all this data. It's not really easy to see how they kind of trick people. And I went in there. I'm like, oh, yep, the vegans way less calories. You know, like there's just the omnivore people just ate. Well, of course, they're not going to lose as much weight if they're just eating more. And I think they designed it in a certain way to get the result they wanted. Of course, you talk about them losing muscle mass. Yeah. Oh, man. So many problems with that. Even the Blue Zones, too. The Blue Zones documentary. Did you see that one with Dan Buettner?
I just, sometimes it's too much. I know I need to watch it, but I've heard it was kind of the same thing. They're just pushing kind of plant-based, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I couldn't get through the You Are What You Eat either. I forced myself with my director of Food Lies to watch the first two, and we just couldn't do it. It's just so obvious that the falsifications they're making, you know, they have a way to spin this narrative. And the same thing with the Blue Zones. I was just telling someone, you know, I run into people a lot and they just ask me questions like, oh, well, what about this? What about that? And I'm like, I could make a documentary about any diet and go to any location in the world. I could make a documentary that it's the bean diet and everyone just eats beans. And I could just go to, I don't know, Costa Rica and just find people who eat a lot of beans and then be like, this is it. They just eat beans. And I'll just go to two families. I'll just show them eating beans. And then I have a documentary. It makes no sense. Like, and also my good friend, Mary Ruddick has actually been traveling the world, debunking the Blue Zones, going to these places. I went with her to Costa Rica actually. And we went to this little farm and the people had all these animals. They had no money. They're up in the mountains. They had a couple cows. They were producing milk and cheese every day. They had pigs running around, chickens. They were getting the eggs. They would slaughter a pig each month. They would have tons of fat. They would just save all this pork fat. They were only cooking in pork fat. And it was like an animal-based diet, really. And then, you know, whatever else, other things they could eat from the plant world. It's not like they're carnivore or anything. But it was animal-based, even by calories. So I think even these guys like Dan Buettner, he goes around with an agenda and tries to find – he has an idea that these centenarian populations are vegetarian. So he just goes and finds vegetarians, right?
Yeah.
But also, he's not a scientist. He's not a food scientist. He doesn't know how to collect data. So the thing with the fat – you could go and look at people and on their plate, it could look like 60% of their plate is plants. Okay. But by calories, I've done this before. I've done the math. I don't track calories, but I retrospectively would look at things. I can have half my 60% of my plate covered in sauerkraut and pickles and some avocado or something. And I do the math on the calories because I'm using animal fat to cook in, or the cheese or the eggs have so many more calories in them. It's an animal-based diet, 80% by calories, even though 60% is plants. So these are the things people aren't considering. They weren't using seed oils for all of history, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They were using animal fat.
And when you look at those populations you were talking about, they were cooking in the lard and all of that. They're more satisfied too. But when you look at calories, like as you were saying, so protein and carbohydrates have 4 calories per gram and then fat 9. So you're getting more calories. So like you said, you have your meat, that should be the basis of your plate. And then you can have all those beautiful vegetables and cook them the right way. You know, if you want to reduce lectins and, you know, oxalates and all that stuff. So it's crazy because I don't think people understand that. Like you can literally take any study you want and twist it into what you want someone to believe or cherry pick studies. I see that all the time. I'm like, you guys are cherry picking studies. Like I see it a lot with like all these crazy accounts on Instagram and it's a clickbait, right? Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, that's the right way. And people are so eager for knowledge and I respect that, but you have to look at, you know, where you're getting your information from and does it apply clinically? That's my big thing as a clinician that actually sees physical patients in a brick and mortar and coaches patients online. You know, I actually see the results and I also see a lot of my vegan vegetarian patients, they can't get to that, you know, 100%, 99%, 98%. They're just stuck because their body is void of what they need and those nutrient dense calories, vitamins that are going to be absorbed better than taking supplements. So I see it clinically. And then personally for me, when I started prioritizing protein, eating more meat, building muscle, my energy levels off the roof, my continuous glucose monitor stable. So, you know, if anyone's out there questioning things, why don't you try it? Why don't you try you know, a couple weeks of being vegan and then a couple weeks of just carnivore, or not even that extreme, do something like you said, where your plate is mostly protein and animal fat, and then you have healthy vegetables.
Yeah, I believe in that too. Yeah, if you're, the carnivore thing seems to me more like an acute, to fight an acute condition.
Yes.
And then, but it's like, well, I tried it for a little bit and nothing changed because I was just eating animal based plus pickles and sauerkraut and avocado, like I mentioned before. Yeah. And like, well, so I just want people to know you don't have to be carnivore unless, yes, of course, if you're doing a specific thing, then yes, it's a short-term intervention, but you can have all of the good results, or you could be more balanced and just better in general.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree with the carnivore. So I'll use it short term, almost like a prescription with patients. So if we're looking to fix a gut dysbiosis that is more difficult, or if they're pregnant and breastfeeding and we can't use botanicals or medications in different ways, it's really helped some small intestinal bacterial overgrowth patients, SIBO patients. You know, they do a couple of weeks of carnivore and it resets that gut balance a little bit, because what you're doing is you're starving the gut of short chain fatty acids and different prebiotics. So your gut flora changes. Yeah, I'm not a fan of carnivore long-term either. I think you need some of that fiber and that, you know, prebiotics and probiotics to feed the bacteria. Why did you try carnivore?
Oh, just for fun. I mean, I've done everything. It's been almost 10 years of me doing this stuff. So I got to try it all, you know? But I wanted to see, because people's like, oh, this, it's magical, you know, once you do it. And it just, nothing changed. It's like, yeah, I mean, I've seen the magic, but it's because I gradually got to my sapient diet, like animal-based plus strategic whole foods or key whole foods. And exactly like you're saying, being mindful of anti-nutrients and preparing vegetables properly. And I got into this whole thing with the spinach and kale shakes with almond milk, and it ruined me.
Spinach,
8 years ago. Yeah, so in the beginning of my health journey, I thought I was being so good. So I was like cutting out all the processed foods and eating more meat and feeling amazing. And then I'm like, oh, I'm going to take the spinach, kale, almond milk, blend it every day. Terrible skin problems. It like ruined my gut. I probably just ate like a pound of glyphosate in a couple of years. And just all these oxalates, just pure oxalates. And so I went hardcore and like no oxalates. And I've been on like low oxalate diet for like 3.5 years. Not that it's a diet. I just don't eat many oxalates, and I feel way better.
You're just not into it. And so oxalates, they're sharp little crystals, right? And you can get them from food. So say you put like a giant mound of spinach in your smoothie, that's tons of oxalates. Cooking spinach will get rid of some of the oxalates, but I recommend my patients just, it's a treat. Consider it like a treat, because it's high oxalate load. And if you have candida or yeast overgrowth, well, the Krebs cycle kind of gets hijacked and you go into this production of oxalates. So especially people with kidney stones or interstitial cystitis or just aches and pains, you know, look into yeast overgrowth and look at your oxalate load. People they look at me like I'm crazy when I go through their dietary, you know, like what they're eating. Mm-hmm. And I see a smoothie with tons of spinach and I tell them to stop having their spinach smoothie. And they look at me and they're like, are you being serious? And I'm and then I explain why. And they're like, oh, and I'm like, you know, Popeye had kidney stones, right? Uh-huh. Popeye eating all that spinach.
I have a couple stories. So one, after I cut out the spinach and kale shakes, I lost like probably 7 pounds of fat. Like I had just inflammation immediately just gone. And I was just a whole new person. It was just like, I thought I was already in shape. And then it just like went away. And then also after 2.5 years of not eating all that stuff, I tried one of those green shakes, you know, those powders, like the AG1 or like the different. So it was one of those green powders. And like someone gave it to me for, you know, they're like, oh, try this out. This is insane. I eat the same thing every day, right? Basically. Mm-hmm. Tried the one shake 2.5 years out of the low oxalate in the low oxalate world, woke up and like had a kidney stone almost. It's like in a cute, very cute situation. I woke up in the middle of the night, like peeing fire. Mm-hmm. And it just like set off this cascade. I don't know what it is. It like could have just done a big oxalate dumping thing, or I don't know what you think that what happened. Cause it was a one-time thing only, never happened again.
Oh, that's crazy. But you stopped taking that.
Oh, I mean, I took it once just as a goof. And I'm like, oh, this is terrible. This was a nightmare.
Wild. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's good to get greens, but you have to look first if they're organic, some of those powders, and you know, what's the oxalate load, you know, what kind of greens are they? So like I really like arugula, cause that you're not going to have the high oxalates, and like you do a lot of sauerkraut, you said, and yeah. So you just have to watch what you're putting in, because you can actually do harm, because some different vegetables, they're, you know, they're anti-nutrients. They have these properties where they can actually like take nutrients away or cause a little bit of ruckus in your digestive tract, and how you prepare them also.
Yeah.
So what are some of the lies that vegans tell? I think that this is, I don't know. You're good at like getting controversial about stuff. So I want you to go for it. Cause I try to be like more chill about stuff, and I just want you to rip it apart. Well, right?
Yeah, no, it's funny. People think I'm aggressive online. Someone just told me like, oh, I know someone who thought you were like this crazy anti-vegan guy online. And then they watched the trailer to Food Lies and they're like, oh, he's really balanced. And yeah, watch the trailer to Food Lies. Yeah. But no, I have to do a little content once in a while to shake things up. You know, it really, right? You need to like get under people's skin a little bit. Or there's this post that went viral. It has like 8 million views right now of this woman cutting up donuts for her 1-year-old. And
yes.
You see that one? Yeah.
I saw it on your page, and I saw it on a bunch of others' page, and I commented on it because this is how I am. So in the Midwest, some people really don't think that food affects their health. Okay. So let me explain this. So she probably knows donuts not the best, but she put some applesauce on there. So she's probably like, this is more balanced because there's applesauce. Like, I know people that they feed their kids like cereal for breakfast every day, tons of sugar, tons of food dye, and they think that it's a balanced food because the food pyramid says that, right? I remember I was working an ER shift in a more rural area, and someone had reflux, and I'm like, well, what did you eat? You know, after we ruled out all the bad stuff and heart attack and all that. And they're like, well, we cut up potatoes and we put a stick of butter in a bowl with the potatoes, probably a plastic bowl. And they put it in the microwave for 10 minutes. And that's what they ate. And so I had a little discussion, and I was like, I was joking, but I was like, can you even like have the microwave on for 10 minutes? Is that safe? But they did not know. They did not know that eating that, you know, oh gosh, all the advanced glycation end products in that, you know, oh, at least it was butter though, but who knows? It was probably margarine, but they didn't know that that affects reflux, that that would cause them to feel bad. They just didn't put it together. So I know people are attacking her, and maybe she did this just to get clicks and to go viral. I don't know, but we need to sit back and be like, hey, some people are really ignorant to this stuff, and ignorant is bliss, and they're not looking for this information. And that's why, I don't know, I'm conflicted with it, because in the Midwest, like you're living in Austin where everyone is pretty healthy. They kind of get it. You probably don't have a lot of obese people there, but in the Midwest, the norm is to be overweight and unhealthy and on 5 medications. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. No, I can't blame them at all. That's what I'm saying. I kind of had to post things just to wake people up. And I didn't write any judgmental thing. I wrote, I was being sarcastic about obesity being genetic. So I guess that is a bit negative, where I was just saying.
Though it wasn't you.
The comments were negative, yes.
The comments that people wrote on it, I was like,
I know. They're very, very rude. Well, it's back to Instagram algorithm. It sent it to a bunch of people like way outside my network. And it's just, and they just found like who would comment. So once the algorithm picks it up, oh, these people are commenting. And then it's just troll comments. Right. So it is what it is. I don't blame these people. Of course. That's why I'm making Food Lies. That's the whole thing. Like I was that guy at 30. I didn't know that my acid reflux was caused by what I ate. I didn't know my skin problems. I went to a dermatologist, and I'm like, every time, you know, I do this, and then my skin gets like really, you know, I had these kind of like dermatitis, like redness, all this flakes. Yeah. Right. And then I'm like, it's from the food I'm eating. And the lady was like, what are you talking about? And she thought she treated me like the dumbest person on earth. I'm like, well, yeah, but if I eat this, like then this happens. She's like, no, I'm a doctor. I have no idea what you're talking about. Here's this cream.
The gaslighting is insane. I had someone break down in my office this week just because they got gaslit by, you know, they were at an urgent care and the nurse practitioner was just so rude to them. She's just crying. Like, people have trauma from how these medical professionals like treat them when they push back a little bit, like you did, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a big problem too. And that's why I think education is so important, because, you know, after a while, the medical professionals are going to have to get on board. But I agree with you. Okay, it's good that you posted that video to cause a little drama, because now more people are going to follow you and watch Food Lies, and you're going to change more lives. So maybe I need to get a little bit more drama.
Exactly. Well, no, I don't want to do it too purposefully. I didn't think it was going to get 8 million views. I just...
It got 8 million views?
Oh, by now. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, every second, it has 30,000 comments. I've never seen, every single second, my phone would just be like, comment, 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 comment. It was crazy. But anyway, back to, okay, so we should be, the original question is about veganism. So this is another thing, right? We need to just wake up the people. And sometimes it's a harsh reality. And the thing with food is it takes a while for things to happen. That's kind of the problem, right? If you just eat some like thing that you're actually allergic to, it, you know, immediately you get the feedback. Oh, I'm allergic to this. I have hives. Okay, I get it. Every other part of food takes years and years to come. Same thing with vegan diets. You think it's great. You stop eating processed foods and you have this honeymoon phase, they call it, feel amazing. And then it slowly slowed downhill. Some people can last for 6 months. Some people last for 3 years. Some people last even longer. But people do not realize the pieces that have to be picked up down the road. And they're not seeing them. You're not seeing that online. Actually, you are, because some of these vegan influencers are telling their stories and they're coming out, you know, huge million plus followers. And they're saying, I was wrong. I felt terrible. I lost my period. I lost my sex drive. I lost my hair. Like crazy stories. And they just don't, no one hears about them, because you just think that it's magical in the beginning because you're eating whole foods all of a sudden. So the vegan lies are kind of threefold, and they kind of just sound good from the top level. I think a lot of society works in sound bites and like first order thinking, right? When you just say something, you're like, oh, that sounds right. And then you don't look deeper into it, right? So vegans have this idea that it's better nutritionally, environmentally, and ethically. Right. And then if they just say these top level arguments, it's like, well, ethically, it's immoral to eat an animal. Environmentally, oh, it take, why not just eat the food itself? Like the animal is a middleman. Like, why can't we just eat the grains ourselves? Or, you know, they have different, oh, it takes so much water, or, you know, they use all these bogus statistics. But it sounds good, right? You're like, oh yeah, maybe we shouldn't be, you know, taking up so much land for animals. But you have to go down to the second level to actually understand it. Actually, animals on land is a good thing. Cows being ruminant animals, bison, sheep, goats, cows on land is a good thing, actually. They are actually helping the land. They're chewing up the grass and they're putting fertilizer and helping build the soil. And for all of history, it was amazing. This is how we exist as America, especially. We have these rolling plains of millions of acres of thick soil and grasses that were there from animals, bison a lot of the time, you just being on the land, and it's good. So, I mean, of course, if you stick a million chickens in a house, that's no good, right? And like, don't let them out. But that's not what I'm talking about. So that's the environmental argument, and then nutritional argument too. It's like on the top level, you're like, oh, well, my doctor said that saturated fat was bad, or I heard the WHO say that meat causes cancer. So these, you know, they can just point to some big authorities and just say the simple thing. And then each of these arguments, they break down when you get deeper, but you need the longer format. You need to listen to this podcast. And I mean, we would have to do a 2-hour podcast to try to break into all this stuff. Right. So that's why I have to make the Food Lies film, right? 6 episodes to break all this stuff down. But it's hard, because the burden of proof is on us to try to change people's opinion from the mainstream paradigm.
Right. And when we're looking at too, the vegan diet, it's not really what it was supposed to be. It is now more processed food, you know, these plant-based burgers with seed oil. And then, you know, if you go to like a vegan bakery or eatery, and if you ask them, like, what are you cooking with? It's all seed oils. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like a big problem. They're not using olive oil because that's expensive. They're using canola oil or sunflower oil, and these are inflammatory. So, I mean, I'm gluten-free, and a lot of the times when, you know, vegan stuff is gluten-free, but then you have to be careful because then you're not getting good protein. You're getting all these seed oils, you know, and really, let's be honest, a lot of it is just processed. So I think that's another lie that I see. It's like, okay, are you being a junk food vegan? Are you actually eating vegan? And I mean, I do have a couple of patients that for religious reasons, they're vegan. And, you know, I really just try to tell them you really have to focus on the protein because I don't think you're getting enough protein. But a lot of times if they wear a continuous glucose monitor, then they see that it's causing problems, or their triglycerides are super high because just a lot of carbs and sugar. And then, you know, sometimes they'll change. I think it's also interesting. I've seen this happen with some friends who maybe experimented with vegan. They get pregnant and they crave meat, and then they're done, right? They start eating again. So I think listening to your body is really important when it comes to that. I'm sure, you know, you're not craving a Beyond Burger.
No, that makes sense. And humans have this intuition. It's hardwired into us. So at least, yeah, when people get pregnant, they're really saving their child. I think that you need this animal protein. And if you study Dr. Weston Price, he figured this out 100 years ago and went around the world. And he found all these separate populations that had no contact with each other. And these were the populations that didn't engage in the modern commerce and didn't have the seed oils yet and the sugar and sack of grains. And they had these same practices around pregnancy, and they would give the women more meat and more protein, more organs, more fat. And they just knew this because they knew that produced healthy children, right? Humans are smart. We're super smart. For all of history, we didn't have rocket ships. We used all that intelligence to figure out how to make healthy children and what to eat and how to hunt and how to collect food and how to detoxify food. It's amazing. They figured out all this stuff like fermentation that helps make the nutrients more bioavailable and gets rid of some of the anti-nutrients and all that stuff so long ago, before they even knew why they were doing it. So humans are super smart. We have this intuition and we've lost it. Modern foods are just tricking people. I think most people probably listening to this podcast know this by now, like all the tricks and deceit that the food industry uses to trick people and basically hijack their taste buds and to make them eat more. But the level deeper on that is we have this intuition to eat savory foods. And for all of history, we ate, when we got this taste of savoriness, that meant protein and nutrients, right? When we got an egg or fish or meat, organs, that taste meant nutrients and lots of protein. Now, I read this great book by Mark Schatzker called The Dorito Effect. He goes, this whole thesis is like, now, Doritos is a good example. You get the fake savory flavor, right? You cover this corn chip that's fried in seed oils, and then you cover it in MSG and fake flavors and all these savory, like kind of glutamate flavors. That's monosodium glutamate, right? It's like, this is this protein savory flavor. It tricks you, right? You want it. You think you're getting nutrients, but you're not. And so, yes, we've been hijacked. So you kind of have to get your intuition back. And sometimes pregnancy will get your intuition back, but sometimes just snapping out of it and losing your palate for the processed foods will help you get your intuition back. And then if you're craving something, it's probably for a reason, right? If you're craving a real food, then it's right. If you're craving a processed food, it's probably wrong.
Yes, I say that sometimes too. I'm like, listen to your cravings, but not if it's something, processed. Yeah. It was funny. So I cook this grass-fed, actually, maybe you'll have some tips with this. So I cook this really nice grass-fed roast, and I had it while we were at my son's wrestling tournament in the stainless steel crock pot I have, which I love because it's stainless steel. Anyway, and it was so tough. And my brother-in-law comes over and he's like, he's like, it doesn't have as much fat, so it's not going to fall apart. You have to add some fat back. But I was joking with them. I'm like, it's good if it's chewy. It's going to work their jaw muscles, give them that nice chiseled jawline. Because for Weston A. Price, if you read about like the research he did as a dentist, that's this receding jawline that everyone has. And because we're not developing that nice jaw muscles, I actually have some devices for my kids that, you know, to start like to chew. We just don't chew enough because we have all this soft processed food. But it's also interesting because, you know, that's why kids need braces and their teeth aren't coming in right. And it goes back to Weston A. Price, because there's not enough healthy fats and, you know, those soft cheeses and protein. But I will also say, as an ER doctor, it's harder to intubate people that have that like micro, you know, chin and stuff. And it's, I don't know. It's just funny because when you look at the aesthetics, also I work in aesthetics, you know, everyone wants a bigger chin and everyone gets filler in their chin. And it's like, just like chew and like eat real food and your jaw will develop better. But anyway, I digress.
Because I like it.
At the end of the
day, it's kind of random.
Vein, right?
I have the someone gave me this chisel gum. It's just like, it's a tree sap. Oh. But it's like, yeah, you just chew on it and your jaw, you know, it's like, we don't eat enough hard foods. Yeah.
What's that feel? I'm going to have to look into that.
It's my buddy Modern Primal here in Austin, but it's chisel gum. So it's just pure mastic gum from the Greek island. It's just, nice. It's like chewing on tree sap. It tastes kind of nice. And you just chew and it just builds your jaw muscles.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. It's really important to do that, especially as we're aging too. I mean, younger to develop that widened jaw and, you know, going into like breastfeeding and all of that, a lot of kids are born with smaller jaws. It's just, we're not getting the nutrients. And then that makes it harder to breastfeed. The palates are high. It's like it's a whole thing. We need to go back to real food. Mm-hmm. So could you go into some studies for supporting, you know, eating meat for protein, for longevity? Why don't we have some positive studies to throw out there for eating meat?
Yeah. So it's great that the Food Lies series took so long because more studies keep coming out. And I think the best one, there's a set of 5 studies that came out in the Annals of Internal Medicine in 2019. And so they had 5 different studies that basically exonerated red meat and saturated fat. And they're just kind of like, you know, it was a meta-analysis and it was this big independent like meta review of everything out there. And they're just like, there is no evidence to limit red meat. So that was good. The problem is, the WHO at the 2015, I actually had this guy, Dr. David Klerfeld, who was part of the panel in 2015 that said that red meat was processed meat was a carcinogen and red meat was a likely carcinogen. And he said it was just a bunch of vegans and vegetarians and that they threw out his evidence. He brought all these good studies that showed that it didn't cause cancer or whatever they're saying, and they didn't use them. They threw them out of their pool of studies that they considered. And it made no sense. And well, I know why. I mean, it's controls. the WHO has an agenda and they put together a committee and of vegans and vegetarians. So there's more studies too. There's lots of smaller studies. I mean, really, what do we need more than these 5 studies that completely just covered it all? And it's a very reputable journal and scientists and all that. But, you know, there's smaller ones too. There's like the Harvard did a carnivore one. Of all these people, it was just sort of a retrospective study and resolved so many symptoms and problems and got off their medications from eating red meat. The problem is, yeah, there's just not that many good ones out there because who's going to fund it?
Yeah, and that's the problem. And I've noticed, so there's a certification you can get as a doctor called Lifestyle Medicine. I can actually sit to be boarded in that because of the integrative medicine program I did. It's funded. It's like Harvard based, and they push the plant-based eating for it. And it's very disturbing to me. Anyway, it's really rough because I feel like people, they want the research, but then they don't understand that some of this plant-based research being done, you know, everyone eating, you know, soy basically, and not tempeh, but like soy, just processed soy, textured soy protein, that it's being funded by soybeans, you know, and in the Midwest, you drive by all these fields, it's all monocropping, it's all soybean. They all have their little GMO sign, you know, which GMO corn it is. And there's glyphosate. I mean, I was just telling a patient this week that it's harder in the Midwest than in other areas because there's so much glyphosate and it hurts our gut health, and our gut health is key, you know, to having good gut health, key to preventing autoimmune diseases and all sorts of things. And it's so frustrating. The soy stuff, like I wish it wasn't around. Mm-hmm. Wish there wasn't so much money in it. Right.
Well, this is what I figured out. So I started Nose to Tail and, you know, supporting regenerative ranchers, and I thought it was going to be great. It's actually not a good business. You don't actually make any money. Like, it's good and ideal in, you know, my, what I want to support, but I quickly realized how the world works. I'm like, I'm selling this really good meat. I pay the ranchers. They do all these practices that are just, it takes longer. It takes more land. It takes, you know, it's harder to do. By the end of it, there's no profit. And then I'm like, okay, box of cereal. The box probably costs more than the cereal, right? It's like 3 cents of cereal. The box, it's 4 cents. And then they sell it for $5.99. And insane, times a trillion, right? For decades in every store you can imagine. And then what can they do with all that money? They do all the marketing, they fund all the research, and they can do the lobbying, and they can go to Washington and do the lobbying. So of course the system is the way it is. If I got every regenerative rancher in the entire country and we got our money together, we'd have like 10 grand. No, I'm just like, you know what I mean? We'd have like 0.5% of what these big corporations have. So of course we're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah. And in the subsidies. So if someone is doing a monocrop, and monocropping is bad for the soil, and I can let you talk about that a little bit, Brian. They're getting money back for the government. So if they're like, okay, you have this property and you're going to do GMO corn on it, we're going to give you what, tons of like thousands and thousands of dollars, right? Can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, I learned about this too, because I was talking to some big ranchers that Gabe Brown does 5,000 acres of regenerative and mixed crops. And he had to go bankrupt and have hailstorms ruin his entire property for 3 years in a row. And he was just forced to do it. So and that's the only way he could do it. He couldn't get any funding from the government. So what he told me, I was like, well, why can't other people do it? You're doing it successfully, right? He's making money now. He's actually doing it correctly and making a profit, right? So he's sustainable. And he said, you cannot get a loan. It's not possible. These farmers don't have money. It's not like, oh man, they're just sitting around with 10K, 20K sitting around to buy all their seeds and do their, no, absolutely not. So they have to get the loans, and the loans are based on the subsidies. If you aren't using the system, you cannot get a cent. So you have to buy into the system to do farming.
Yeah. And that is why Americans are so sick. It's really messed up. We have a really great local farm in Ohio. You can buy into the herd. So then you're able to purchase raw milk and raw cheese, and it's great to know your farmers. It's great to, you know, just support those farmers around. And who cares if you spend more on your meat? It's actual high quality, and you're supporting farmers that are doing the right thing for the land, and they care about their cows. Like, I love our farm, because they'll just like make the cutest Instagram reels about the cows like coming in and going out, and they care about them. So then you feel good when you're eating it. You're nourishing yourself with animals that were raised correctly. So eating Nose to Tail, you talked about that a little bit. Any tips, I don't know, to get like kids to eat Nose to Tail? Every once in a while, I like put a little ground liver in. I get this ancestral blend. Our local farmers can't blend in liver with their ground beef because of regulations. It's so annoying, because I'm like, okay, you can serve, like you said, Doritos with red dye in it, which has many studies linked to ADHD and hyperactivity in kids, but you won't let my farmer grind liver with meat together so I can trick my kids. Anyway,
it's insane. Yeah. And luckily in Texas, they're allowed to do that. So yeah, we sell that.
Tell us about the Nose to Tail company.
Yeah. It's a hard business where it's hard to actually sell through a full animal. Like, you actually need to go through the animal. People, you can't just get like endless ribeyes. It's like, no, you need to sell the whole animal. That's the whole point. Nose to Tail, we're using it. And so it's hard to just even keep in stock and that type of thing. So we actually don't have much stock right now, but the concept is good, of people just finding places locally, or if you have to look online to get this type of regenerative beef or nose to tail, like getting the organs mixed in. We did the liver, heart, kidney, and spleen all mixed in. So that's the number one way that I eat the organs too. What's that?
How did that taste?
It's amazing. No, it's great.
Like, would kids notice?
No. Well, there's two versions. If you have like 20 to 25%, you'll probably notice a little bit, but if you season it right, you won't. But then there's like a 10% version, or you can get different versions that are lighter, and then you just don't know. It just tastes rich.
Yeah. So it's funny because I've done it like with taco meat and stuff, and I'll notice because I'm cooking it, but my kids don't notice. And I won't tell, you know, my husband doesn't really listen to my podcast. So that's good. But I'll like look around the table and I'm like, they're eating liver. Ha ha. And yeah, it's just funny.
Well, that's kind of funny.
I cooked it. Yeah.
That's funny because I kind of did this. I should let the cat out of the bag. Sean Baker is a famous carnivore and he doesn't really like liver. He's just, well, I don't think he likes the taste of it, and he just doesn't care about eating it. But he came over to Sapien Center after he went to Joe Rogan kind of recently. It was in Austin, and we came over and we had a brunch with him, and we had hamburger patties and eggs, and it was actually liver. It was a primal with the organs mixed in. I didn't tell anyone. And everyone loved it. Everyone loved it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like takeout places put MSG. Like if you get Thai takeout, like the one that we get it from rarely, we have to say no MSG, and they write it all over the box and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they don't tell you. So you're helping them. No one's allergic to liver. Like,
oh, I know. Yeah. I don't feel like bad about it. I mean, I could tell them. I probably did tell them at the end or later.
Yeah. Be like, hey, you like liver now, right? Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I love it. Tell us a little bit about this Sapien Center and your vision for that. It sounds really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're talking about these big concepts of the establishment and like the systems and sick care and big pharma. And as I get more into this nutrition world, the more I just want to go away from most of the societal norms and, you know, modern society is just so backwards. And we're really trying to make this into a worldwide movement. And I hope, you know, all kinds of people like you will just kind of be involved in this big movement. We already are, right? You're doing podcasts, you're helping people, you're doing all this content, but getting together a huge group of people that kind of reject, it's like a society within a society, mm-hmm. right? We could still live. We don't have to go and live in a cave, or we don't have to go in the middle of nowhere and like have a ranch with, you know, no access to anything. We can do this within society if we just group together, make smarter choices, like going to your farmer, being, cow shares, mm-hmm. CSAs, stuff like this. You can just live in normal society. Don't see the normal doctors. Don't see normal sick care system. You know, find doctors that do the cash model or, you know, whatever else. We can do this. So the Sapien Center is just kind of like the headquarters of that movement. That was what I'm trying to do. And we have people here in Austin, and they're all about it. We have members, and we have sauna and cold plunge and co-working and an outdoor gym and fire pit and events and stuff. So it's great. But it's like the real magic behind it is building a movement of people that want to live closer to human. Mm-hmm. Right. And I kind of realized like what is every modality that we have that kind of works? It's getting you closer to being human, or it's getting you closer to living in an ancestral way, or giving your body what it expects. Like some of these medications, it's like, what do they do? Ultimately, it's they're putting your body back into this homeostasis or just ability to heal itself or be human, right? And it's like, why do people, biohackers, they do cold plunges. Well, this is just mimicking the conditions that we used to live in. So everything that helps us that I've seen kind of is mimicking our ancient lifestyle, which is when we were healthy and when we were vibrant and strong. And I mean, I'm assuming you believe in this type of philosophy.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a little different in the Midwest. You know, I say that a lot in Northwest Ohio, but I'm the weird one. Like, I'm totally fine with that. I remember before I got my cold plunge and I was going into the river, and I was in the Maumee River, and I had to stop doing that because there was this one truck that kept coming at the same time, and he would never say anything. It was kind of weird. So I'm like, I switched up when I was going a little bit, but this one guy was so funny. I like start walking into the river, you know, there's like ice on it. He's like, "What are you doing? You're so crazy." And I'm like, "Oh, plunging." So be that crazy one, like be the one that, you know, I'll whip out beef sticks or a keto brick, you know, and people are be like, "Why are you snacking on that? You're so interesting," you know? And I'm like, "It's good. Try it." And I think that's when you don't have that community or you haven't found it, the more you put yourself out there, even though it's uncomfortable, you don't know what the ripple effect will be and the kind of community you will build around you. And I do have a close knit of people that we're in the same realm. You know, I'm just really outspoken, you know, after the pandemic, the cat was out of the bag. I'm just more outspoken now because I want to help more people.
Yeah.
So, and putting yourself out there, making a documentary, you know, saying all the things that need to be said, even though they're awkward on Instagram, it's amazing. And we need more people like you.
Well, thank you. Yeah. It's the movement here.
Yeah. Love it. All right. Well, we're going to wrap up. So Brian, would you tell everyone how they can watch Food Lies if they're local to Texas, you know, how they come see you at the Sapien Center? Tell us all the things.
Well, yeah, just go to Food Lies on any platform, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, the internet. You'll find content. You'll find the trailer, which you should watch. And yeah, episode one is ready. I mean, just internally, we're showing it to studios and production companies. And so we're trying to get it on Netflix and finish. We got to finish the other five episodes too. They're kind of half made. And yeah, we're going to change the world with this thing.
Yes. Well, congrats on your journey. And thank you for being so transparent and sharing everything with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
This podcast was created and hosted by Jen Flegar and is for informational purposes only. It is not medical advice. This podcast disclaims responsibility for adverse effects from use of information contained in this podcast. This podcast does not promote opinions of their guests or their own and does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests of the show or endorse any qualifications for the guests of this podcast. Guests may have financial disclosures. If you think you have a medical problem, consult your personal physician or team. Thank you for joining.